Our guest this hour is a woman who had an abortion years ago and has dedicated her life since to creating a space where women can talk about their own experiences without fear of judgment. She discusses why she wants American society to get beyond pro-choice and pro-life labels in the abortion debate and embrace a dialogue that allows for nuance, uncertainty, and even ambivalence. She is pro-voice. Are you? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We will talk with the author of Pro-Voice, How to Keep Listening When the World Wants a Fight. And we will talk about how we can, or how she says we should, talk about these controversial issues in a way to hear each other rather than fight with each other. And we welcome your questions, and we welcome your views on this. Do you consider yourself pro-voice? Are you able to talk with someone who you disagree with on controversial issues? Are you able to hear what they are saying? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Aspen Baker is the founder and executive director of Exhale, an organization that helps women share their abortion experiences and receive support and counseling. She is the author of Pro-Voice, How to Keep Listening When the World Wants a Fight. She recently gave a TED Talk on how to have a more nuanced dialogue about controversial issues like abortion. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thanks a lot for being with us. Well, let's start with the story of your abortion.
Happy to start there. I had just graduated from college. I went to school at UC Berkeley, and I was working at a bar, and I was in a new relationship when I found out that I was pregnant. And, you know, one night I was at the bar finishing up my shift talking to my friend Polly, and we usually had a drink, and I said, I'm not having a drink tonight. And she said, why not? And I said, well, you know, I'm pregnant, and I'm not sure what I'm going to do yet. And the first thing that she said to me was, I've had an abortion. And it was the first time anyone had ever told me that she had had an abortion. And I went through a couple more weeks of trying to figure out what the right decision for me was. And I can honestly say that it was really difficult to know what the right decision was. I wasn't sure how I would ever even know that. But I did have an abortion. And afterwards, I heard, you know, a lot of the fighting and the arguing over abortion, but it sounded sort of the same to me. Like it just sounded like a lot of noise from both sides. And I needed to talk to somebody. I was having a lot of emotions. It was not something I ever thought that I would do. I had grown up Christian and in a pro-life community. So it was something that I didn't know a lot of people besides Polly. So that's kind of what started me on the path to founding my organization, Exhale, and inventing Pro-Voice.
Yeah. So what was it about that experience what did that teach you about how we talk about abortion in this country?
It taught me that there was a lot of yelling at who people thought was their enemy and the opponent, and that people like me who'd had abortions, and that was in the late 90s, and I learned, you know, after Polly and after doing the research that abortion is really, really common, that, you know, one in three women in America will have an abortion in their lifetime, and that there was this big gap between the way that abortion gets debated in politics, and then the fact that this is a common experience that very, very few people talk about. And I wanted to start listening to people who'd had abortions. And so when we founded Exhale, we started with a talk line that people could call for emotional support for women and men, and we made a strong point of not putting a label on it and not making it political. We didn't want a label to be a barrier for anyone who wanted support after an abortion, and we thought that the labels of pro-choice and pro-life would either, you know, encourage some people and discourage others, and we wanted our service to be available for everybody. So that's where we started.
Yeah, and share the story about when you went to a bookstore looking for information, a book from or about women who had had abortions.
Yeah, I mean, maybe one thing that I always think is interesting about the backdrop to my story is that this is all happening in Berkeley, California, which I think the rest of the country considers as maybe a little wacky and pretty liberal and pretty open. And I was having a hard time even in Berkeley finding places to talk openly about my emotions and my experience. And I went into a popular bookstore, and I was hoping to find like a self-help book, like, you know, here's your top five steps to do to get, you know, wellness after your abortion. And I didn't see anything in the health section. And when I went to the clerk, I said, you know, hey, I'm looking for, you know, a book about abortion, self-help. And the woman had an incredible, like, physical, visceral reaction to my question. And she just looked at me and she said, you know, well, abortion is a choice. And I was like, okay, you know, sounds great. I'm wondering, you know, where I can get a book about abortion experiences. And she said, all abortion books are under politics.
Yeah,
and I think that is how it's been for a really long time.
Yeah. Why do you think it's been that way?
I think there's a few different reasons, and I have that question when I started writing my book, and it's certainly a question that, you know, I've been thinking about in the 15 years of running our organization. Why aren't we talking about the abortions that we have? And I think I found some answers to that, which I write about. And, you know, one is that even a lot of the activists for abortion rights that were really, you know, fighting for the right to have abortion were often not the actual women having the abortion, that there even seemed to be two groups of women. One was the group that was sort of helping women who needed abortions, and then the other was the group of people who were getting those abortions. And sometimes the leadership fighting for abortion rights were openly public about having had abortions, but oftentimes they were not, that there was this, you know, conscious constituency was what one of the authors called them. So there's always been this little divide on the pro-choice side about who's helping people get abortions and who the actual people are. And then certainly once Roe versus Wade was passed, that historically we've seen that that was this huge wake-up call for pro-life people who felt like that was just so far beyond what, you know, the morals of this country should be. And so then there was this huge reaction to Roe versus Wade. And so amongst all of that and sort of that coalescing of both of those movements, you know, maybe one promoting more sort of shame and the other one providing, you know, promoting a message of privacy, that sort of privacy and shame kind of created this environment of saying this is not something we talk about.
And so what do you mean by pro-voice?
Pro-voice is not a position on abortion. It's not a, like, yes or no, good or bad, legal or illegal. Pro-voice is really a way of thinking and a framework that is about our own behavior. It's a philosophy for believing that we can be in conflict with one another and disagree with one another, but do that with mutual respect. And it's how we then participate in conversations with one another. So the hallmarks of pro-voice practice are listening and storytelling. And we work in the landscape of the gray areas, that we know that it's so rare for one of our individual stories to fall in really simple black and white terms, that our own stories with abortion can have a lot of nuance and layers. And that is also true for the way that people think about abortion as a political issue or as a moral issue, that there is all these gray areas, and that is the interesting place to have respectful conversation.
Yeah, and what do you mean by the gray areas?
The gray areas, I think that really came from the beginning of listening to people who call our talk line, which is nationally available and offered in multiple languages, that, you know, rarely did we hear a story that was like made it easy to sort of fit into one camp or the other, that certainly people who call our line feel grief and sadness and loss about their abortion, and other people call our line and they feel relief and hope for the future and they feel confident. And then sometimes people feel both of those things at exactly the same time, and sometimes people feel neither of those things and aren't really sure how they feel. And we also talk to people who had abortions years ago, and so we get to hear how feelings can change over time, you know, as someone's life changes, as they grow, as they become an adult, as they have new experiences, they might look back on their abortion with feeling like, oh, it was the right decision in the end, or, oh, gosh, I really didn't know what I was doing back then, that all of those things can happen. And so giving room for that ability to change and evolve and grow, to frankly be a human being, and not just a simple stereotype, is where the concept of embracing gray areas really came from. And then we see that can be really useful too in talking politically about things.
Yeah. So why is this philosophy better than I'm pro-choice and I'm pro-life?
Well, it is, maybe not better for everybody, to be perfectly honest. I mean, I think that we have a problem in this country about our inability to communicate across our differences. And our differences can be politically, like pro-choice and pro-life, and our differences can also be racial or world, you know, experience or identity, that there's all of these ways that we actually are really different from each other. And how do we see that and treat one another with respect instead of fear? And most of the time, people express frustration about the status quo of the abortion conversation. And most of the time, people want something that's different. But in order for us to make that change, it's not going to come about by pointing our fingers at other people and saying, you have to change. The change comes about because we're willing to be different in our own behavior. And so when I talk about the fact that I am pro-voice, and I believe in a dialogue of mutual respect, that means that I just don't wait around and say, well, I'm not going to respect you until you respect me. It means I'm going to respect you right now, and I'm not going to call you names. And I know that there's this battlefield mentality, and it's real because these are important issues and people want to know which side you're on. But I also know that when we're fighting about things politically, we're often drowning out diverse voices. And I'm going to pay extra attention to make sure that I can listen to the voices that are happening that need to be heard.
We are talking with Aspen Baker. She is the author of Pro Voice: How to Keep Listening When the World Wants a Fight. And we're talking about how to do that. How can we listen? How can we hear the other side of controversial issues without yelling at each other? What do you think? What do you think of this philosophy? Pro-voice. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about changing the conversation about abortion and other controversial issues with Aspen Baker, the founder and executive director of Exhale, an organization that helps women share their abortion experiences and receive support and counseling. And she is author of Pro Voice: How to Keep Listening When the World Wants a Fight. And we welcome your questions for her. We welcome your own experiences. What do you think of this Pro Voice proposal? Would we benefit from listening more to people that we may otherwise disagree with, or taking sides out of it completely? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Aspen, I just mentioned that coming up this afternoon on our program Central Time, the conversation is going to be over the debates over gun rights and gun control, and a guest saying that it's going to divide Americans more than ever. Your pro-voice philosophy can extend to issues like the gun debate?
I did hear that on the break as well, and I thought that was a very interesting conversation to have after ours. And it is certainly one that people have been talking to me about and people at my organization about. And I think there's similar things going on as well as with abortion, and that abortion is something that people experience and the commonality of it, and how that's really sort of separate from the political dialogue, and yet this personal experience of abortion can really run the gamut. And I think when we start talking about guns in the country, that people that we know and love are gun owners, and people that we know and love have experienced gun violence. And so that both of those things are often, you know, in our lives and in our families and in our communities, and that how do we have that conversation amongst us? And how do we create the cultural conversation that we want to have and make sure the politics are really reflecting what's happening in our real lives? And I think that's often the same with abortion, is that there's this sort of political debate going on, and you know, listen to the politicians and you're like, what are they talking about? Often. And because it's happening in a vacuum, because we're not talking to one another about the abortions that we have. And so when we can, you know, really role model the kind of dialogue that should be taking place, then we can push our politicians to say, no, we expect you to respect each other in this dialogue, and we expect you to listen to your constituents in this dialogue, because that's how we operate as America.
Yeah. Well, I know that you want respect in politics, and you want to kind of take the politics out of the discussions. But boy, we have a big political debate going on here, right in Wisconsin. Wisconsin is among the states that are now considering bans on abortions after 20 weeks of pregnancy, and this is extremely controversial in Wisconsin. A Senate committee may vote today on this ban. Outlawing an abortion after 20 weeks, no exceptions for rape or incest, may be a consideration if there is a medical emergency happening. Hearings have been very heated. Many are sharing stories, both in support and against the bill. What hopes would you have for how Wisconsin politicians resolve this particular conversation?
Yeah, I'm very aware that that's going on, and I wish I could say that pro-voice was an easy answer, and it's not. And I also know that, you know, many people on all sides have really, you know, thought that there could be an answer to this dilemma. Well, if we just come to common ground on this policy issue or on that policy issue, it seems completely like there is a wide variety of rational, pragmatic public policies that could be enacted. And if that were the case, if it was easy, if it was simple, it would have been done a long time ago. And so I think one of the things that pro-voice does is really recognize the fact that this is complex, and that complex problems are going to have complex answers. You know, I only wish we started with pro-voice, you know, 20 years ago or 25 years ago instead of 5 to 10, because it is a process of how we switch from fighting with one another to opening up that conversation. And so there is a long view that's taking place. And there's a couple of things that I sort of want to add or that I'm thinking about in Wisconsin in particular. I do have family in Wisconsin. I was just there a couple of years ago when my grandmother died. And my organization a couple of years ago did a national story-sharing tour. So we worked with five young women who'd had abortions who wanted to go tell their stories. And what they were really driven by was the desire to let other women know that they weren't alone. One of the fellows that we worked with is from Milwaukee, and we were able to go to Milwaukee as a part of this tour. We were also in New York, and we were in Texas and California. And we went to churches, and we went to colleges, and we went to community centers, and we talked to people of different generations and in different age groups. And we found that when you create a small, you know, intimate environment, you know, a group of like 10 or 20 people, and you open up, you know, with stories and start practicing sort of how we listen to each other, that we found that people from a wide range of political beliefs could really understand the value of listening. And that happened when they walked into rooms that were mostly pro-life, where people felt really uncomfortable listening to them tell their stories, and also in rooms where they were mostly pro-choice and sort of were, you know, maybe those rooms were a lot more frustrated because they weren't taking a political stand. And we did this in Milwaukee, and, you know, across the country we found that people were more prepared to listen to diverse stories, that they felt really included in the conversation in ways that they hadn't felt included before because they didn't like the sort of us versus them mentality, that there are ways to do this, and it's not going to solve, you know, Wisconsin's quote-unquote problem tomorrow. But Wisconsin has been in a long, big conversation over the course of many years, of which abortion is just one, about the future of your state. And I think that this is an interesting model to really adapt and start experimenting with.
Aspen Baker is the author of Pro Voice, How to Keep Listening When the World Wants a Fight. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Alejandro in Madison is with us. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy, and good morning, Aspen. I'm calling you to express my support for Aspen's idea, and I think that if her concept were the ground rule for so many of the debates that we have, you recently spoke about gun rights, but even across the political divide, just the fact that your starting rule is that you're willing to listen to each other based on experiences and not labels, whether these be political, Democrat, within the state, say, you can't bring up Governor Walker without things becoming polarized right away, or how the cuts in the university are being handled. So I just wanted to express my support for that and congratulate her, even beginning with the name of her, I think her group, Exhale, because it just made me think whenever those topics come up, the first thing I do is sort of tense up without noticing it and sort of hold my breath, think what I'm going to say next. And at that moment, I think it's exactly what she's saying, that I've stopped listening. And the second point I wanted to bring up is that, I mean, I applaud her openness, but I think maybe a reason why things seem to be so polarized is that maybe some women have had abortions, but there's still a stigma associated with it. And so maybe they keep that matter very private.
Aspen?
I think that's true. I think that abortion is certainly taboo. It's something we're told, you know, is a secret, is private, or is shameful. And I want to be careful that, you know, the women who've had abortions have an opportunity to share their stories and potentially change the conversation and the debate. And there's a lot of opportunity there, and there's a lot of opportunity for leadership. And my organization believes that women who've had abortions, you know, are the best experts on this issue. They've gone through it. They know what it's about. There's a lot of wisdom that is available to everybody from hearing their stories. And at the same time, we can't ignore the fact that there are real consequences in telling a story. And we hear that on our talk line. We hear how people have been, you know, excommunicated from their families or kicked out of their church or made into a laughingstock at their workplace because people have found out about their abortion. So there's real reasons why people don't share those stories. And so that's why the listening part becomes such a critical element of how we are pro-voice and how we change that conversation. And sort of the more we the more we fight and make it about us versus them, the further away we are from really listening to women's stories. And the more we sort of, you know, tone that down and create spaces to say, we're interested, we want to hear, we're not going to judge you. And others take the responsibility to say, we're going to listen without judgment, the more we have access to hearing those stories. So it is, you know, both simple and complicated. And it is also the place of huge opportunity for where the conversation can go in the future.
Yeah. And Exhale, the name of the organization, is just that. Breathe, relax, stop holding your breath. Is that what that means?
You know, when we were planning the story sharing tour that I was talking about earlier, we were thinking about, you know, what are our goals for these conversations. And I said, you know, when people know that they're going to talk about abortion, people's shoulders end up in their ears. And everyone gets really nervous about what's going to happen. And we will be successful if people leave the workshop with their, you know, shoulders down where they're supposed to be and feeling relaxed. And I certainly heard that myself in one of those workshops where a young woman said, you know, I knew we were talking about abortion, so I came in with my armor, you know, and for her, her armor was, you know, her facts and her talking points and her attitude, you know, and she was ready to fight for her side. And then after this 2 hours experience of listening and storytelling, she actually didn't, you know, use any of those things. And so at the end of the workshop, she said, you know, I came in wearing my armor, but it turns out I didn't need it.
Yeah. So what, Aspen, is the end goal to make the subject less controversial, to find the best policy solutions for these big problems? What is the end goal?
I think pro-voice is really about more about the process than the position. So there is no, like, there's not in my mind, oh, you know, the future is going to have this sort of legal landscape. But I do believe that we can, if we are listening to each other and if we are sharing our personal stories, if we are comfortable embracing the gray areas of our stories and finding connections across our divides, that if we are engaged in a process that is doing all of those things, then we are going to have a legal landscape, or then we're going to have a political climate that meets more people's needs. So the specifics of that, I don't know, but I'm 150% committed to the process of how we go about finding it.
Kenneth in Janesville is with us now. Hello, Kenneth.
Hello. I just want to say, you know, I support what your organization has been doing, but the issue, and it's not been said, is in the end, it's you know, the killing of another human being, and that hasn't been said. I mean, it's the same issue with the guns and with abortion.
Well, why? And, what do you mean? It's the same issue with guns.
I mean, guns are killing people, and.
Yeah, I'm happy to jump in here, Joy, actually. Mm-hmm. Kenneth, thank you for bringing that up. One of the things that when I say, you know, women's experiences of abortion and talking about those, realize that many women are going to talk about believing that they killed their baby. It is not all women. It is definitely some women. And that will be a part of the conversation. And part of what we do on the Exhale Talk Line is listen to that and hear that and help people figure out how they're going to move on from that. Because healing and well-being are possible for everybody. So in no way are we trying to not have that conversation, but the way that we want to have it is a little bit different, and the way that we want to have it comes from the experiences of people who've had abortions.
Yeah. And Kenneth brings up a good point, though. It's maybe hard to calmly talk about an issue that you may feel just deeply passionate about, maybe deeply held religious beliefs, moral beliefs that abortion is murder. So how can you just totally respect what somebody has done that you consider is murder.
Yeah, and a lot of, you know, Christian and moral and religious beliefs is really about compassion and empathy as well. So there's many, there's sort of myriad values and beliefs that we can call on in these difficult conversations, and one doesn't, take the place of the other. And I do think it's interesting that there's sort of this idea that, like, we're calm and sort of passionless. And that doesn't have to be the case. That we're fighting over abortion, we're fighting over guns because it matters, because it's really, really important to us, to our own lives directly, or to sort of the place that we want to live and the values that we want to see held by our community. So we're not fighting for no reason or because it's fun. I mean, certainly some people think it's fun, but because it matters. And so that passion is important, and that passion is going to help us translate into the next thing. But we can also have passion about how we listen. We can have passion about being empathetic. We can have passionate compassion. That there are all these ways that we can decide which, you know, sort of values to live at different moments.
Charles on Facebook says, the core problem is that this very willingness to hear other sides of issues, to give them real consideration, to grant validity and compassion to others' experiences, is the essence of liberalism. That's problematic because it can create a symmetry when conversing with folks whose fundamental resistance to difference means they cannot hear or validate contradictory experiences. You want to react to that?
That's an interesting comment. It reminds me of several years ago, my organization was hearing from a lot of men on our talk line, and a lot of the men didn't necessarily know, like, how do I give support to this woman in my life who's had an abortion? And so one strategy that my organization came up with was to put out e-cards for loved ones to be able to send and say, this is something I'm available to talk to you about your abortion. Like, I'm here to listen. I care about you. Those e-cards are still available on our website. This created a giant sort of media reaction, and I was able to do a lot of press. And I remember having these conversations with some journalists that believe this sort of balance idea, like, well, if we're going to present one side, then we have to present the other side. And so she was like, well, you know, we're going to put you on, but we need to get someone on the other side. And I was like, who exactly, like, what is my other side? Like, I'm not sure, you know, what that other side is. And so I understand that there's this way in the media and this way in sort of politics that we need to sort of show these quote both sides. One way I try to think about it is to think about all sides and to think about a spectrum, and that there are people who are pro-choice and pro-life. There are people that we as, you know, human beings can hold multiple complex realities at the same time. And so even just the way we think about what a side is or who's on that side, we can change the conversation just through that alone.
Aspen Baker is the founder and executive director of Exhale, which is an organization that helps women share their abortion experiences and receive counseling and support. It's an organization she founded after she had her own abortion many years ago and found that people weren't talking about it. She also discusses her pro-voice stance as a way to approach other controversial issues where we often may find ourselves fighting rather than talking or understanding. She is the author of the book Pro-Voice, How to Keep Listening When the World Wants a Fight. And that's what we're talking about doing, and wondering if you can listen to all sides of controversial issues without yelling. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about how we can change the way we have conversations about abortion and other controversial issues. We're talking with a guest who says she is pro-voice, the founder of this philosophy. Pro-voice, How to Keep Listening When the World Wants a Fight is her new book. She is Aspen Baker. And we welcome your questions for her and your own experiences at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our next caller is Tim in Spring Green. Hello, Tim.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you very much. I was just thinking that one of the big problems that comes up is that you feel like there are legislative consequences to some of these discussions that get in the way of having an open discussion about it. Abortion's a great example, because when you feel like there's an active fight to limit your own freedoms around that, then it becomes a fight very quickly. You don't feel like that people are listening, or there's an effort to find a middle ground. You feel like you just have to defend what you already have if you don't want to lose it. Mm-hmm. And I wonder how that factors into the discussion.
Aspen?
I think that's a really great point, and we see that a lot with stories in particular. There are, as people are sort of talking about their own individual experience, let's use regret, for example. There has been a lot of women who have regretted their abortions, and they do not want other women to go through that same experience, which makes total sense. And so there have been, support centers that have been built up around the country, and then some political organizing developed around that, so that it not only just, I don't want other women to go through this thing like me, but I'm going to, actively try to affect the legal landscape so that they actually can't go through this experience like me. So the experience of abortion regret has become very politicized. And so often what happens in response to that is saying, well, I don't feel regret and I'm fine. and so then on the so that is the pro-life side has promotes a lot of the abortion regret stories. And then the response on the pro-choice side is to say women don't feel regret. And so here is this real, natural, human experience that happens. We regret things in our life on a regular basis. We're humans. We make mistakes. We have flaws, and we have imperfections. And so instead of saying, wow, how bad that must feel to regret an abortion, what can we do to support people who feel regret? How do we create a cultural climate? How do we create families that can support people who feel regret, help them move on from that, help them heal from that experience? That sort of regret has become this linchpin of whether or not you regret it or not is a decision about whether or not abortion is good or not and whether or not it should be legal or not. And that's a problem. And we need to have the personal conversation sort of shape the politics rather than the other way around. And my big sort of personal sadness, frankly, about this is that there are women who've had these abortion experiences, across the spectrum, and then rather looking at one another and saying, wow, I'm so curious about your experience. Well, you experienced regret? How awful. I'd like to hear about that. I didn't, but I would want to know something more about it. That there's not this sort of sharing of stories, and that's part of how the politics has actually divided women who've had abortions from one another, as well as dividing along these party lines. So if we can look at each other's, different experiences with support and respect, or even some curiosity, and believe that we can learn something interesting from each other, then maybe we won't have those political consequences that Tim is talking about.
Yeah, there are some critics of pro-voice out there. One writes that she actively wants to advocate in telling her story, for example, and that she thinks other women should have the right to share their experience, even if they attach a political agenda to it. What are your thoughts on this?
Of course. Absolutely. This isn't no way to say that, no one should be doing politics, or that we should never, ever be fighting. pro-voice in many ways is saying the only conversation that exists around abortion right now is fighting about it. And sometimes stories are a part of that. And never would we say, well, you shouldn't tell your story for those political reasons. And we want to support people who do, absolutely. And in addition to the political conversation, we can build a cultural conversation as well.
And another critic writes that there are those whose stances on abortion are really non-negotiable, and listening to other women's stories won't change this. Does pro-voice go far enough?
You know, we're not really, we can't change other people. I think we all, anyone who's ever been in a relationship probably knows that, we can only change ourselves. And so listening is not something that's for everybody else. Often listening is for us. And if we're actively listening as pro-voice people, then we should be hearing things that demand we shift our own perceptions. And so it's often about how are we in this moment when we're afraid of a political consequence. How do we react in a different way than just fighting back or with defensiveness? How do we hold on to our stance of listening and respect, even when it feels under threat?
Craig in Hayward is with us. Hello, Craig.
Hi there. Well, I just I'm from California, and I have a cabin up in the Midwest here. And as I'm listening to this discussion, it's very clear to me that pro-voice is just another name for pro-choice. And I felt that a very interesting comment that came in from Facebook about the gentleman who said that it creates a symmetry. You know, I love analogies. Imagine you're a property owner and you're sued for someone who's fallen on your property and they've never even been on your property. So it's clearly a frivolous lawsuit. Some of the lawyers want you to sit down and have a discussion. No, I don't want to have a discussion that's clearly, you know, has no basis in anything or truth. So I was sad when I heard that one third of all people are in experience for abortion or had abortion. You know, I don't get involved in the politics, and if that's a true statement, that's very sad and that's very disgusting. So there's wives that are no longer walking around right now because a mother chose to end that life. That child could be in college now. That child could be in a relationship. It just makes me sad that we're trying to justify something that I don't think involves discussion. So.
All right. So he says pro-voice is just another way to say pro-choice.
Yeah, he said a lot of things that I'm trying to figure out what I want to respond to. And, you know, I am a person. I have had an abortion. And so... I talked earlier about how it's difficult for us to share our stories or share what we have gone through because there is a lot of judgment out there. And so I think, you know, Craig probably just demonstrated that for all of us, which is not to say that his own feelings about it don't matter. They do. And, you know, that statistic, which is a true statistic from the Guttmacher Institute of 1 in 3 women having an abortion in their lifetime, different people respond to that in very different ways. And Craig's response is certainly one of those, like, wow, like, I didn't know the problem was that bad. And how sad is that? And then for other people, they say, oh, wow, I'm not so alone. I'm not the only one going through this. And that can make people feel better. And I think these questions about sort of what's sad and a lot of the what ifs that Craig just brought up, like, well, what if these, you know, women had these babies, and what if all of these, you know, future things could happen? And I think the mistake is to think that women aren't thinking about those, and that's probably one of the things that frustrates me the most is this idea that women are not clear or don't know what's happening to themselves and in their bodies, and these are the questions that we hear about on our talk line, which is private and which is confidential and which is anonymous. So it's no surprise that people are calling a confidential anonymous talk line to sort of talk through those what ifs. What if I had the baby? What if I made these different choices? and not talking to their friends and family, because they often will know exactly the reaction that they are going to get. People are very clear about what their positions on abortion are. So I think in relation to the other person that you suggested who emailed, you know, their desire to speak out and speak up about their abortion and to do so in a political way, also, like, all of these reactions totally make sense. You know, nobody is a bad person. Nobody is our enemy. We are all having emotional reactions to this very serious and important matter. And Pro Voice is attempting to recognize that and treat everybody with respect in the midst of these highly passionate, important debates.
Yeah. And I didn't mean to single out, but I just wanted you to address what some listeners might think is that Pro Voice is a ruse for pro-choice, the pro-choice movement.
You should ask some pro-choice advocates about that because we've gotten significant criticism from the pro-choice movement for not taking political stands and for not being a part of the fight. So, you know, we've also been accused of being pro-life because we're willing to sort of talk about, you know, if a woman feels like she killed her baby and a woman regretting her abortion. So it sort of depends where someone is coming from and what their position is. And it really sort of demonstrates what that "are you with us or against us" mentality looks like. So if I'm not using the words that are sort of cluing people in to say, like, I'm on your side, then the only other option that they can think of is you're on the other side. And so we get that from both sides on a regular basis. And that is really a part of the challenge of how you create a new conversation when the only way that people have to understand it is, are you with me or against me?
We had an emailer, Jay, who wants to know what space Pro Voice leaves for men who feel they have no say in the abortion issue. Very briefly, as we're running out of time, what about men's voices?
About 8% of our callers to our talk line every year are from men. So we validate, you know, a man's emotions around an abortion experience and provide support and resources. We have men that serve as counselors on our talk line and men on our board of directors. So, you know, men have often their own stories with abortion. They may be similar or different to a woman's, and we listen to those too.
Yeah, and in our final moments here, how do you hope Pro Voice changes society?
I hope more people, when they feel like they're, you know, backed up against the wall and being asked to pick a side, and if it doesn't feel right for them, that they feel that they are a part of a community of pro-voice people who are transforming the way that we have difficult conversations, and can stand in a place of strength, knowing that respect for others, even under attack, can go a long way towards healing our divides.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Aspen Baker is author of Pro Voice, How to Keep Listening When the World Wants a Fight. She is founder and executive director of Exhale, an organization that helps women share their abortion experiences and receive support and counseling. She recently gave a TED Talk on how to have more nuanced dialogue about controversial issues like abortion. Thanks very much to Christy Taylor and to Kayla Blado for producing this hour. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. Coming up tomorrow at this time, it's the Week in Review. We'll talk with two guests from different political perspectives about the week's top state and national headlines. It's the Week in Review every Friday at this time. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.